Steve, my good man, how the devil are you?
I'm good, buddy. How are you?
I'm wonderful, my friend. As you well know, I got horrendous sunburn. I say horrendous, it wasn't horrendous sunburn, but I did get reasonable sunburn on my nose at the weekend, and that's still feeling pretty charred even now.
It does look pretty dark, mate. You've just got a really brown nose now.
Yeah, it's still not quite tan, and it's beginning to flake. But we are better now. It's not quite as bad as it was Saturday night.
No, I wasn't too bad. I fared pretty well. Yeah. I was definitely red. The back of my neck was red. But it was worth it.
It was worth it. So we went to Snetterton, our local race circuit, to watch just a club race meet. And we only saw the Saturday. There was events on the Friday and the Sunday, wasn't there? But we missed those. It was great to be back at a racetrack, mate.
Oh, it was good, mate. Everyone was saying the same thing. Everyone we spoke to was just like, it's great to be back.
Yeah, exactly. Just hearing the bikes and some of the smaller classes and just smelling the two-stroke. You're like, oh, this is the one.
Blue Haze Racing, which was great, which is just like the classics.
Yeah.
That was amazing. Every now and again, you just got that waft.
Yes, exactly. And a nice hot day as well, which just helped. And a gentle breeze, which was even better.
Yep. Good days racing there. And it was entertaining as well. These guys put on some good races.
Yeah, they did. And as with all kind of club level and amateur level racing, there's most races involved one or two guys significantly quicker than everyone else. But then there's always a decent scrap in the middle.
They were good. And it was quick as well. There was no messing around, no waiting. As soon as one race finished, it was probably a minute or two and the other bikes were out of track. It was great.
Yeah, that's it. What was it? 19 races throughout the day, all of them being between 5 and 10 laps. So yeah. Pretty short.
It was a full day.
Yeah, and what, 2 minute laps, something like that?
About 2 minutes, roughly 2 minutes, depending on what you were riding.
For the smaller bikes, I guess it's 2 minutes. I think they were doing like 140s for the super bikes.
Yeah, it's a good day.
Yes, it's really made me want to get into track days and racing, though.
It always does me as well. I go there and I'm like, eBay, track bike.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, clearly cannot afford to get into this. That's
Well, it's an expensive hobby, but would be an awesome one to have.
Yeah, it certainly would. It will be my midlife crisis, I think. I'll do a season of motorbike racing when I hit like 45.
Yeah, 5 years to go for me. I'm planning already.
I like we're both planning our midlife crisis for 45 as well. So we're like, can I hit 90?
Yeah, I'm going to go for 90. If I can hit 90, I'll be happy.
Yeah, exactly. It's an optimistic run.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of state I'll be in. But
yeah, exactly. Right, Steve, shall we be diving into the show?
Let's dive straight in, buddy.
Good stuff. So, guys, I can't remember the intro. That's terrible. So I'm going to try again. I'm Tim. He's Steve. And this is For the Love of MotoGP. So, Steve, we'll start this show off on a somber note, I think, and move on from there. I'm sure everyone listening has heard about the events that took place in the Moto3 qualifying on Saturday at Mugello, in which Jason DePasquier was involved in quite a nasty collision and was flown to hospital from the corner and sadly did not make it. Even after surgeries and the medical staff doing everything they could for him, he sadly passed away.
He did, bless him. He's only 19.
Only 19 years old.
Sad, man.
Yeah, it's really not a good way to start the weekend, was it? We saw the Moto3 race and then the announcement happened just after the Moto3 race. It was very clear the Moto2 riders who were on the grid at the time hadn't been told about it. And that became very clear in their post-race press conferences as well. But yeah, it kind of put a somber mood on the entire weekend, really.
It did. It's an unfortunate event that can happen in motorcycle racing.
Yeah, well, it's a motorsport full stop thing, isn't it? Like, it's the sad side of the sport that we all love, in which it's dangerous. These guys are fucking gladiators. Like, they are putting their lives on the line, really, for glory and entertainment.
Yeah, it's basically what it is, just for art, entertainment.
Yeah.
Bless them. And they do a cracky job, but unfortunately, every now and again, this happens.
This does happen. We've seen it numerous times over the years, but our our thoughts and our prayers are obviously with Jason's family, with his friends, and expanding that out with the team, with the entire paddock. I mean, he was only one of two Swiss riders in the Grand Prix paddock. So obviously all the Swiss fans out there, and also the Portuguese fans. His mother was Portuguese, so Portuguese fans had almost adopted him as their own as well. So, you know, it's huge sadness across the motorcycle racing world at the moment. And like I say, our thoughts and prayers are certainly with his family and his friends, first and foremost. We did see, so we won't dwell on this for too long, but I did just want to mention this. We saw a lot of riders, a couple of riders, Tom Lutie was a prime example, decided not to race at all. He's like, nah, I'm not doing it. And this was before we'd even heard about his passing. This was just the severity of the crash, severity of the injuries. And a few riders said, nah, we're not going to do it. But then after the news came out, there was some MotoGP riders that were saying that, well, it was after the race. They were saying we shouldn't have been racing. Like Petrucci was like, I feel dirty racing. And Bagnaia said that you just can't concentrate. And he puts part of his crash in the race down to the fact that he just wasn't really concentrating because they'd had that minute silence. And I don't know. It's a lot of guys that were saying that they didn't want to race. Rossi said that it didn't make sense to race, but it also didn't make sense not to race. And I guess Rossi's got like the broadest view on this over everyone, having been in the paddock, having lost his best friend in a motorcycle crash. And so we have seen, Rossi has seen it all. But for me, the other riders that were saying we shouldn't have been racing and really sort of up in arms about it after the fact, I don't know, it feels a bit weird because it feels like they're saying all the right things, but they still chose to go and race. They could have pulled out, like Tom Lutie pulled out. But Tom Lutie decided that whatever championship points he could possibly get weren't worth it. So he did pull out. And I think that's the ballsiest move of all. I think complaining about it afterwards. And while I'm sure, yes, this does affect them, if it's affecting you that much, maybe it makes sense just to say, nah, I'm not doing it. And maybe that makes a statement. Maybe that makes a statement to Dorna. Maybe that makes a statement to the fans. Maybe that does make the sets the precedent that if this happens, I ain't racing.
No, absolutely. It's their choice. They can pull out if they wish.
Yeah.
And if it is going to affect you in that kind of way and then put your own life at risk, do it. Pull out. And for whatever reason, don't put yourself at risk as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, to say it afterwards and then still race, you could have pulled out.
Yeah, that's it. It feels a bit weird to me. It feels a bit like they're trying to take the moral high ground without actually doing anything. It's just, it's all words. It's just, yeah, I don't know.
It just sounds like they're trying to say the right thing.
Yeah, it does. It feels like that. And I'm sure these guys are experiencing these emotions. Like, they're not lying about experiencing these emotions, I'm sure. But I don't know. I think if you're going to race anyway, maybe you're better off just keeping your mouth shut and having these conversations in the meetings, the MSMA meetings and the rider meetings and stuff. You don't need to be airing this with the media, I think. I think the media was already... Some media outlets, I'm not going to get into who and where and why, but I think some media outlets reacted quite badly to this. There's been a lot of articles and we've seen homepages that are just full of Jason DePasquier articles. And while that's very nice, yes, that is incredible to be celebrating this kid's life. I think that it feels a bit clickbaity at times to me as well. I think that we're in a weird era with the internet, with everything, where respect is, we don't really know how to show respect to the dead anymore on like an international scale. The customs are different everywhere, and I don't know, the whole thing feels a bit weird to me that riders are complaining afterwards, but that's just my take on it. And I mean, I think everyone's got a different opinion on this. I'm sure most of you listening are going to have a different opinion to me. You may well have a different opinion to me, Steve. Yeah, it's just, I don't know, something doesn't sit right about the riders complaining and then just doing it anyway.
I'm of the opinion of, let's remember him, let's celebrate him. If you want to pull out, just pull out. Don't come out and say it afterwards. I'm with you on that one.
Yeah.
You're going to do it, do it. But like getting back to the websites, there were so many just following the story up.
Yeah.
And yes, write an article, write your own thoughts, your memoirs of him, your experiences with him.
But that can be one article. That doesn't need to be 6-7 articles plastered all over your homepage.
It did start to feel like some people were literally doing it as clickbait.
Yeah.
And I completely agree with you. Do your one and then let's let him rest.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's not start to use this sad situation for your own glory.
Yeah, exactly. And on that note, Steve, I think we will do that and we're going to leave that there.
Pay our respects.
Yeah. That's exactly it. Like we say, our thoughts, our prayers, and our hearts reach out to everyone involved and everyone that knew him. But, you know, we're going to move on with the show as normal. We'll carry on the normal chat. It's going to be, hopefully, the usual light-hearted show. But even if it is, we're not belittling Jason DePasquier or his memory. We are kind of celebrating, I guess, him in the only way we really know how as motorcycle racing fans, and that is to just carry on having a beer and just enjoying the sport that we all love.
I did just raise my can then, but no one can see it.
No, you did. Well, you did, and I said having a beer and raise my can too. So yeah, to Jason.
To you, buddy.
Let's move it on then, Steve. The only other bit of news I think we've got coming into this race, there'll be a lot to talk about when we talk about the MotoGP race, but the only other bit of news is that Brad Binder has now signed on for another 3 seasons with the KTM factory team.
Oh, it's a nice long contract for him.
It's a good contract, man. Yeah, another 3 years. Seat.
That's a good ride to have going forward at the minute.
Certainly. I think it's a very coveted ride, and there are a lot of potential MotoGP riders within the KTM family already. You look at Raul Fernandez, who, yeah, he's only 6 races deep into his Moto2 career, but has been incredible. Look at Remy Gardner, his teammate, leading the Moto2 World Championship. They're 1 and 2 in the MotoGP World Championship. Oh, in the Moto2 World Championship, sorry. So they are looking at solid spots to get onto KTM's next year in the MotoGP grid.
That is a good seat to wrap up. Yeah. A very good one. And puts a bit of pressure on Oliveira to wrap his seat up as well.
It's a good point. I don't know what Oliveira's contract looks like, but he only moved to the factory squad. So I imagine he had a 2 or 3 year deal coming into it.
I think it's 2.
Okay, so he's good till the end of next year anyway.
Yeah, but he's doing all right. He had a good race this weekend, which we'll get on to.
Yeah.
But if I was him now, there's a lot of pressure to reserve your seat. So.
Yes, there is. But I mean, I'm quite confident he's safe. I think he's also been within the KTM family for a long time, except for 1 year in Moto2.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it was first year?
Yeah, because I don't think there was a KTM Moto2 team at the time. That was still Afiayo's just standard team.
Yeah, you're right. But yeah, pressure's on him now. Wrap up your own spot, look after your seat and your ride.
Exactly. So, I'm confident he'll get another one. He's a solid rider. We saw it this weekend. And I'm confident that KTM have got their future for the next good few years, really.
As long as they can keep progressing like they are, they're going to... can't talk now.
Oh, mate, you lost your half a beer in and lost all your words.
Off as well, I can't see anything. As long as they keep progressing how they are definitely going to be a title challenger soon.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And that will be for Brad Binder by the end of 2024 when this contract is up. That would have been 10 years competing for KTM within KTM factory squads for throughout the three classes in MotoGP.
Not bad.
So let's run through the top fives in the Moto3 and Moto2 races then, Steve. Moto3 finished Darren Binder in 5th place, obviously the brother of the aforementioned Brad Binder. Ayumi Sasaki finished in 4th, Gabriel Rodrigo finished in 3rd, Jaime Masia was 2nd, and Dennis Foggia in 1st. You've watched Moto3 this week?
Yes, mate.
Dennis Foggia's bike, Jesus Christ, that bike was fast in a straight line.
That did shift.
It
that
was really absolutely incredible. Shift. The only bike that wasn't losing out to the slipstream by the line out of the final corner. Absolutely incredible.
Don't know what fuel they put in that, but the thing was rapid.
Well, do you remember, we've seen it before with Leopard. Do you remember, they've just always sort of made a rapid bike. Yeah. Like, they've always had a bike that's quick in a straight line, geared well.
I don't know how they do it. I think whatever they do, they just put that bike together 100% perfectly for that rider.
Yes, certainly.
Whatever reason, however they set that up, it just works. And we, like you say, we've seen it in the past.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it with Lorenzo Della Porta the year he won the title. The bike was so quick. Even in, Jesus, what's the British guy's name? Stabby Man.
Danny,
yeah, there we go. I knew you'd get it with Stabby Man.
Lug it. I know exactly what you mean. It was fast then.
Yeah, exactly.
He looked good on it. It's just somehow they find that little bit extra.
Yeah.
And like you say, Moto3 is all about the slipstream.
Certainly, especially at Mugello.
Yeah. But he could just hold it.
Yeah. It was strange to see.
Yeah, it was quite strange.
But it certainly paid off and he really did make it work. And then we will just do a notable mention to one Pedro Acosta, who has not failed to make it into the show this year. And I feel like I still want to talk about him. Finishing 8th in this race for the 2nd race in a row. And, you know, he's raced 6 Moto3 events in the Grand Prix stage and has been on the podium for 4 of them. So, it's been 2 finishes in 8th, but he's still comfortably in the lead in the championship, 40-odd points ahead of his teammate in Jaime Masia. So he's... still looking pretty...
It's closing down a little bit, but not quite enough.
Yeah.
Not going down quick enough. As long as he keeps scoring points like this, he's...
Well, that's it. If he can just stay in the lead pack, he'll be on the podium winning races again pretty soon.
Exactly.
You know, arguably, his racecraft on. We've seen amazing racecraft from him, but maybe races like this, where you're racing a bike that's way faster in a straight line, maybe the experience that some of these other guys have got is just better, and a big advantage to them. But he'll get that experience, and
come. Early days yet.
Exactly. And there's talks he's already got a deal in place to get him into Moto2 as well.
Yeah, apparently so.
Which I imagine will be with Aki Ayo's KTM squad again.
I'd have thought so, yeah.
So that brings us nicely on to Moto2, actually, then, Steve. So the top five in Moto2, Marcel Schrotter finishing fifth place. Marcel Schrotter's had quite a consistent season so far, scoring points, but he's never
set the world on fire.
No, he's kind of constantly there or thereabouts, and has been in Moto2 for a long time now.
He's been there for years.
Aside from Tom Lüthi, I wouldn't be surprised if he's got some of the most starts in Moto2. I wouldn't know that off the top of my head. I'd have to look at the numbers, but I'd be putting him up.
I can't think of anyone else really challenging. But yeah, he's always there or thereabouts. You just saw that bloke at the back of the picture who's always there, waving his arm. He's like, hello.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's just won't go away.
Yeah, that's exactly it. He's just there and just chipping away.
Just a consistent...
But doesn't feel like MotoGP material, does he?
No, that's it. I feel like if he can't regularly be on the podium in Moto2 and be challenging for the title all the time, then you're not quite cusping on coming at MotoGP, and it would just be...
That's it.
Sometimes we do see it where these guys step up and that bike suits them. Could be the case.
Look at Quartararo.
Yeah, exactly. But now, Marcel, it just doesn't feel like if you put him on a MotoGP bike, he wouldn't change.
I don't know
if the results would come. I think it would just be not a wasted seat. That's doing him an injustice. But someone who could potentially get that bike better results.
Yes, yeah, that's certainly it. I mean, look at Tom Lüthi. Tom Lüthi had that cracking season where he challenged Morbidelli really up until the final few rounds in the Moto2 Championship. He got that promotion to MotoGP, did a season, didn't score a point in Moto2.
Exactly. You had your chance. Bye-bye.
Yeah, exactly. So then fourth place in Moto2 was Joe Roberts, one of two Americans on the grid this year. Actually finished third on track, but got screwed by the track limits a little bit. And, you can argue the toss here either way. Yes, he ran 10 centimetres off track, and on the green stuff, it's probably he did maybe gain a thousandth of a second or something by doing it. It wasn't really a deliberate thing. It was an accident. But the rules are the rules, and I'm very pro just consistently enforcing the rules.
Yeah, and Dora are doing that.
Yeah.
If you're off, you're off. Take your punishment and get on with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Which we'll talk about later.
Yes, quite. So Marco Bezzecchi inherited third place after the track limits incident. Marco Bezzecchi has this habit of just inheriting good places from people running off track limits.
He's just always in the right place.
He is. I mean, he did it in that race against Jorge Martin last year. I think his first win in Moto2 came from Martin running off.
I think it did, yeah. I think you're right. He's just there. He's just jammy bugger.
Yeah, exactly. Right place, right time, every time.
Yeah, if he's around you, you're probably like, oh, God, I'm going to get...
Dude, I'm going to run off track for fuck's sake, Bezzecchi. Yes.
He's probably just that. He's giving you a little handy nudge. He's like, off you go.
Yeah, exactly. He's using Valentino's just giving him the mind powers, the kinesis going on here.
Yeah, Jedi mind tricks going on. Yeah. He will run wide.
Yeah, exactly. This is not the corner you're looking for.
Yes, it's over there on that green bit.
So second place in the race was, we've briefly mentioned him already today, Raul Fernandez, the amazing rookie, and he was leading most of the race. It was only in the final few laps his teammate in Remy Gardner he didn't get faster, but the rest of the field got slower, and Remy just stayed the same speed, just didn't really, his lap times didn't change that much, and in the final few laps he was reeling in his teammate by 3/10, half second a lap, and was just comfortably by her, and job done. There we go. His first race win this year, his second only ever race win in Moto2, but stamping his authority on the championship, he's now got an 8-point lead over his teammate.
Yep, good place to be.
Yes. So, Steve, let us dive into the MotoGP race review, shall we?
Let's go for it, buddy.
Good stuff. So, before we do, I do have to say, the fan wall this year, this weekend, pretty inoffensive, actually. The fan wall quite little off to the side of the screen. Didn't mind it too much. Except when it was paired with the fucking... I'm not even going to say them again because they annoyed me. The sunglasses sponsorship. Because we saw it and it was coming on... I think it was coming on to the start-finish straight, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was last quarter.
Yeah, so you see it and the fan wall is off to the side, fair enough. And over the track is the sponsor's name there in all its glory, and the riders are riding underneath that. That's fair enough. Do that. You're paying to have your name there. The race probably couldn't take place without you as a title sponsor. You're entitled to that. Happy days. Moving on. But then they had the virtual, I'm going to have to say it, the virtual O appearing above that. And the camera just focused on the fan wall and the O. And we just watched the bike streak off into the distance again down the straight, which is an important straight, Mugello, because the slipstream potential is
all about
massive.
The straight, basically.
Yeah.
You think Mugello, you think that straight.
Yeah, exactly.
It did annoy me. It didn't annoy me as much as what it did you.
Obviously, because you're just a more calm human being, whereas everything just makes me rage.
I don't know. During the race, I just want to see the bikes. But yeah, the first time I saw it was Sunday, because obviously we were out Saturday. And it was just this massive shot, like backdrop shot, wide angled.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, what's going to happen here? And then I realised. Up pop the virtual fan wall.
Yeah, exactly. And the bikes just streak off into the distance.
And these little tiny ants just disappearing by.
Yeah, it's very frustrating, mate. And the thing is, like, I'd probably find it a bit less annoying if MotoGP, for us at least, isn't already behind a paywall. Like, you already have to pay to get, I mean, I use your subscription, but you have to pay. See, I'm enraged for you, Steve.
He's not doing it on my behalf.
Yeah, exactly. You have to pay to watch this already. So they're making double bubble off you. Like, they're getting money from the advertising and from your subscription fee. And that's frustrating.
What they don't realise is, I don't want a pair of Oakley sunglasses. I don't care.
I can't afford a subscription, Steve, let alone a pair of fucking Oakley sunglasses.
I'd like to be able to afford a pair of Oakley sunglasses, but I can't. And to be fair, I don't really like many of them.
I think they're okay. Not the ridiculous ones you see some of the riders wearing. I saw a great Valentino Rossi advert appeared on. I was on some random website. And
those huge old things they used to wear.
Ridiculous ones.
The styles that have been out over the years, it's whatever Oakley give you to wear.
Oh, 100%. And they're probably paying you to wear it. So happy days.
The minute you're back in your motorhome, they're on the side. You don't care about them.
Getting all scratched and shitty. Yeah. Whereas I'm always putting my sunglasses in their little case and protecting them.
Alright, but like you said, I don't want to see all this. I know it's only for revenue because everyone's lost money last year with COVID, and I get that, I understand it. But it frustrates me. Don't do it when the racing's on. Do it all you like when the, you know.
But then no one's watching it. The problem is they have to get eyes on it, and I do understand this. I understand the economics of it, but it's annoying when it's a paywall. Like, if I get YouTube Premium, for example, I don't get ads on my YouTube videos. So why can I not have the same experience with MotoGP? If I'm paying for the privilege of watching it, why should my enjoyment of the race be affected by their adverts? I don't really think it's fair. And I found this with Formula One is quite a good example. Formula One, when you watch it on Channel 4 like I do, because again, don't have Sky Sports to watch it, it's the extended highlights, so there's ads all the time, and it's annoying. Yeah. You don't miss anything, but they just appear every now and again. But if you watch it on Sky Sports, which is behind the paywall, there's no ads through the entire race, so you just watch the whole race.
Yeah, I'd like that. I really would like that. We're fans, we just want to see the racing. This is what we come for.
Yeah, exactly.
I want every detail about the race. I'm not going to go out and buy anything just because you've put it on the screen. I get why you're doing it.
Yeah.
I completely do. I just don't want it.
Yeah, that's the thing. But then, you know, I do complain about it. But again, I understand the economics of it. I understand that the racing probably wouldn't be able to go ahead in the same manner if it wasn't for these things. So it's a necessary evil, but I just like a good moan, Steve. So I'm going to continue moaning about it.
Fair enough. I'm not that much of a moaner, but it does annoy me. It wouldn't bother me if it fucked off.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't miss it if it wasn't there.
Exactly.
Let's move on to the our normal run through of the team, Steve.
I've
sort of ranked the teams as per usual. And Honda.
Yes.
Honda again. They certainly performed the worst out of all of the factories. Mm. It's amazing, isn't it? We spent all of last year saying, wow, Honda really need Marc Marquez back. And the first two races of this year, we were saying the same things. And now Marc Marquez is back. It's still like, well, shit, Honda needs the old Marc Marquez back. And I'm sure this current Marc Marquez we've got will eventually get back up to speed. At this rate, I can't see him winning another championship, but it is Marc Marquez. So, you know, once he is back up to speed, I'm sure a championship will come.
It's a baffling situation what's going on at Honda. For such a big manufacturer, looking at what's happening there over the last 2 years, I completely agree. We spent all of last year saying, right, Honda need Marquez back to develop this thing, to ride this thing. to give them the wins, to bring them the championship. Now Marquez is back. We know he's injured. He's a different Marquez. They just can't pull it together still.
Yeah.
Even for their other riders who have been, like, Tacker and Alex have had a year on those bikes. Tacker's had longer.
And quite successful years. Like last year, like, let's not forget, Alex Marquez has got two podiums. Tacker Nakagami should have won a race and was scoring well. Never got a podium, but was very consistent. And
yeah. It's just something's missing there big time. Something really has shot them in the arse.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it is the past seasons of just relying solely
on Marquez. Yeah. And we saw it though, didn't we? We saw it with Ducati and Casey Stoner. Ducati relied on Casey Stoner. So arguably, Honda did it with Casey Stoner. Honda were lucky. Marc Marquez is as talented, arguably, as Casey Stoner and could get on that bike and could win races on it. But the current Marc Marquez, you know, 8 years older than he was then, now has had some pretty severe injuries and things and is not quite up to speed. Has the game moved on since he hasn't been there?
Absolutely. This is why you build an all-round bike, not a one-direction bike, because it just will not work.
Yeah,
You can't build your entire project around one person.
No, exactly. And we've seen it go wrong so many times, and yet over and over again, teams do it. Over and over again.
You know, Honda went through a spell of barren. They just didn't win anything. They were always around, they just didn't win anything.
Well, that's exactly it.
And then they've got a sniff of glory, a lot of glory, and they've put all their eggs in one basket, and it is now, when it goes wrong, it goes badly wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the Casey Stoner to Marc Marquez thing is probably quite similar to what happened with Yamaha, and Yamaha built Valentino Rossi a bike.
Yeah.
Yamaha... You know, that Colin Edwards couldn't win on that bike. No. Ben Spies, when he replaced Rossi, won one race in those 2 years. If it wasn't for Jorge Lorenzo being as good as he was and having the very... and actually taking Valentino's high corner speed style one step further, Yamaha would have been in the same boat in 2010.
It's a thing that seems to happen to all the manufacturers. Mm. They slip into this trap of just going down one road.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get out of. Yamaha, I think, had a better situation than Honda because they built an all-rounder. You know, you can make a bike quicker, but it's harder to make a bike turn well.
Yes, that's fair.
But they did the corner speed. They worked on the corner speed, and now they're working on the top speed.
Yeah.
Whereas Honda has just been a pig to ride for so many people. They cannot get to grips with it.
And for such a long time, because you could argue the Honda's been a pig to ride since 2013, if not earlier, since 2012, 2011, like it's been up.
Let's say 2011, and it's just Marquez slipped into that role where he could ride it.
Yeah.
And it's just that one person. You need to find that talent which can just tame this thing.
Yeah.
And they're lucky. Like you say, they're very, very lucky that Marquez came along and could do it.
Exactly. That part. And that's why they paid him so much to stay.
Yeah. They paid him the big bucks. He's buggered himself up, and now they're really screwed.
Yeah, although I think he offered them. I don't know if he offered and they refused, or whether he did actually, but he offered to give his wages back for the year he wasn't riding.
Yeah, I did hear something.
Which is like 20 million, so you see how much money he's fucking got. Yeah,
if you could afford to give that back,
yeah, exactly.
You're fine. You could probably pay to develop this bike yourself.
Yes.
And make it work for everyone else. But Honda need a big reset now. They need to get back to the drawing board. Get the LSD and the crayons out and just really look at what they've got.
Yeah, exactly.
And just sort this package out, because it will get to the point where you will struggle to get people on the bike. If you know, if you lose, let's say for instance that the
look at the Aprilia thing. The Aprilia thing is last year, when Aprilia had been shit for year after year after year. How many Moto2 riders turned that down? How many MotoGP riders turned that ride down? Lorenzo Savadori got the ride because no one else wanted it.
Yeah, all bar Lorenzo.
Yeah,
Savadori. He was the only one brave enough to take it on.
And arguably, I mean, if you're in his position there, what have you got to lose?
Exactly.
No one's expecting much of you anyway. Get a year on a fucking MotoGP bike, even if it goes badly, you just go back to superbikes. Job done.
Awesome. What an experience as well.
Yeah, exactly.
What an experience to take back. I've got all this experience in MotoGP. It makes me a better rider.
Yeah, that's it.
Can't ask for more.
Anyway, finishing positions for the Hondas there, we kind of got a bit sidetracked. Taka Nakagami qualified 15th, did not finish the race, crashed out towards the latter end of it. Nice. Alex Marquez qualified stone last in 22nd place and raced to 14th. So, you know, got a couple of points, but not really, not even on the performance he was doing last year.
No, nowhere near yet. He needs to pick it up. And he only got that position because X amount of people fell off in front of him.
Well, quite.
He did overtake a couple of riders, I believe, but still, he was looking at a non-point scoring position.
Yeah.
So, bad day at the office.
It certainly is. And his brother in Marc Márquez, riding for the full factory Repsol Honda there, qualified 11th, also had a bad day in the race, crashed out on the second lap.
You're good.
Not good at all. He had to fight through from Q1 to even get his 11th place, where he really relied on Maverick Vinales. Got a big toe from Vinales and really riled Vinales at the same time as well. I think Vinales was very angry. They're coming through. You and I were sitting watching this, weren't we? There was the lunch break at Snetterton. So we got there.
Timed it perfectly.
Yeah, exactly. Got qualifying up and we're just laying in the sun watching qualifying on the phones. And Vinales was quite unhappy.
It was just incredible to watch. You're watching this multi-time world champion.
Yeah.
Completely reliant on a toe from someone else because he can't push it on himself.
Yeah.
And it didn't matter where or what Vinales did.
Márquez was going to be there.
He was behind it. And we saw it when Márquez was ready to exit the pitch for his second run. The pit crew were putting the paddock stand under his bike.
Yes.
And the tyre warmers were drooped over the top of the tyres to keep him warm.
We're waiting till Maverick goes out,
If I was him, if I was Mav, I would have literally got alongside him and stopped.
Oh, what can you... I wonder if there's a rule. I wonder if they're not allowed to stop in pit lane like that.
Stop in pit lane.
But we saw it, didn't we? Even on that lap, they did their out lap together. Márquez just shadowing Vinales, ready for fast lap. Vinales pulls into the pits.
Yeah, he takes the shortcut back in.
That was it. And Márquez just followed him through.
Yeah.
And the Maverick's just there, like waving around, doing like, what the fuck are you doing, man? And Márquez just stone-faced, no reaction at all, just there, arm on tank, the like pit limiter on, just chilling behind him. And then out they go, and he grabs the toe, job done.
Yeah. If that's what you got to do, do it. But it's a sad state of affairs when someone like Márquez is relying on the toe.
Yeah. I mean, we saw it before. We saw it not last year, year before, when he was following Quartararo around. Yeah. Remember and had that massive high side because his tyres had cooled.
Yeah. It will happen again. This will bite him in the arse.
Yeah.
I did hear that he apologised to Maverick afterwards.
Yeah, and apparently Mav just didn't say anything.
Yeah.
Just ignored it. Just let it go.
Yeah. Which probably, if you don't want to get into it,
I mean, Mav isn't someone that should be getting into mind games with someone like Marc Márquez, is he? I think he's aware of that. I think he's aware that if he tries to battle Marc Márquez off track, he's going to lose every single time. So it's just not worth engaging.
Yeah, just let it go. Let it be. Let's go to the next race and see what happens.
Yeah, exactly.
And if he gets behind you, we'll just do something crazy.
Yeah, fair. But then Márquez, during the race, he had a nasty crash. It wasn't that nasty, to be fair, as far as crashes go, but he did collide with Brad Binder.
Yeah.
And Márquez was quoted at saying, yeah, it was a racing incident, but it was my fault. It was more my fault than Brad's. Brad didn't do anything wrong. He's like, the two bikes just converge into, or two lines converge into one there. And he said he didn't realise Brad was there and he just collided into him.
Yeah.
And that was job done. And he crashed. Brad carried on. And we also saw Morbidelli running out onto the gravel from that. And that really fucked his race too.
Yes, that's a lot of bad luck for Morbidelli. But it was, like you say, Márquez had admitted fault.
Yeah.
So trying too hard. And it was a big lunge. So lucky he wasn't hurt. Wasn't a bad crash.
No, well, I mean, yeah, you are still always a bit worried, aren't you, now? You're like, oh, God, no.
I was sat on the sofa. I was like, don't pick the bike up. And he starts picking the bike up. I was like, put it down.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you fucking opened a window once. Look what happened then. Put the bike down.
Window's probably like five times as heavy as this bike. Just put the fucking thing down, for God's sake. It really got me stressed out. I was sat on the sofa. So just calm down. I was like, look.
Yeah, fucking idiot.
Yeah, dad mode, come on. Put it down. Listen.
Less shots of Papa Márquez actually in the pits.
I've noticed that. Yeah, I was going to say that to you. I think it's because just because of what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, there were shots, haven't there? Since Mark has been back, we have seen shots of Papa Márquez in the garage and things, but there wasn't any this race that I can remember.
No, you get the odd snippet, but then they do tend to cut to him when he's getting animated.
That's true.
And he's not really got anything to be animated about.
Yeah, he's like a crash on lap two. Right. The other son's like riding around at the back of the points.
Yeah, he is probably out the back of the paddock smoking 40 fags.
Yeah.
Hooked up to a defib machine because his heart's about to pop and just trying to get through the weekend.
Yeah, I imagine that's how he spent most weekends, to be fair.
If both my sons, you know, if Enzo and Brody were out on track, and I'd be a wreck.
I don't think you'd be able to be there.
No.
I think you'd have to be like just out in the allotment or fishing or something and just get a phone call at the end.
Yeah, I'd have to be doing something. I'd probably be out on one of the bikes just like bimbling around the countryside.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably doing circuits in the lab.
Yeah.
Just try to watch them. But just, I couldn't be there.
Yeah,
I don't think I could. That would be an absolute nightmare in the pit.
Yeah, oh, yeah, you'd probably get kicked out. Touch that. I just want to know. Stop it.
Yeah. That's it. No, Dad. What's that? Dad, put it down. Dad, that's a piston.
Yeah.
Look off, Dad.
The other Honda, though, in Pol Espargaró, qualified 12th, finished the race in 12th. Top Honda is something, I guess.
It is dull.
But, yeah, exactly. It's nothing to write home about, though, is it?
No, it was a very dull race for him. We saw very little of him all weekend. Mm-hmm. The commentators did speak to him about him a bit. Just is what it is. If you're top Honda in 12th, then if you say the top Honda was 12th, my thoughts instantly go to Taka.
Yeah, exactly.
Not a Repsol Honda.
Yep, that's exactly the case. I wonder if he is looking now across at KTM, and they've had their struggles at the start of the year, so I guess he was looking across at them being like, that's okay, they're struggling too, I'm struggling, it'll take us a while. But now KTM, after one race at least, appear to be getting back up to speed. I wonder if he's been like, shit, maybe I jumped ship at the wrong time.
I'd be sat there, I'd be in that pit garage, poking my head around the corner. Hey, pit.
But the thing is, I think as far as KTM are concerned, they're quite lucky he left.
I think they are. Because
obviously the talent they've got coming in now, the Binder, the Oliveira in the factory squad, Remy Gardner, Raul Fernandez coming in as well. Like they didn't have the seats for him. No.
Imagine sticking your head back in that garage or ringing up your old crew chief or your team and just saying, what's the chances? You're going to get told no.
Yeah, you're going to get told no. You might get an ambassador role if you're lucky.
Yeah, come back. You could be a test rider.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, he'd be a potent test rider, but he's not.
He's still young. He's still got many years racing left in him.
And he's not Bradley Smith. He's faster than Bradley Smith, so he knows that he will get a ride somewhere else.
Yeah, he's basically just worth more than a test rider's role.
Yeah, so.
But he has. We said last year he made a bad move.
Yeah.
That's really coming to fruition now.
Yeah, it really is. We'll see what the rest of the season brings.
Yeah, we're writing him off early, but.
But, the projection or the trajectory. God, that was a hard word to say after with just a single beer. Trajectory is KTM's trajectory is certainly going up, whereas Honda, you would argue, are not going up at all. They are flatlining, if not slowly falling down.
Jesus. Yeah, that's definitely a downward curve, I think. There's a long way to go for them yet.
Yeah.
Hell of a long way. It's going to be many years before we see the old Honda back.
Yeah, I think that's true. Moving on to Aprilia?
Yes, mate.
Okay, Aprilia then. Once more, sort of a tale of two races here, really. Lorenzo Savadori qualified 21st and scored a single point for finishing in 15th. Wouldn't have got that if there wasn't 70 fallers in front of him, though.
No, he probably wouldn't have been much further ahead than Alex Marquez, if ahead of him at all.
No.
Is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is. I guess at least he stayed on the bike. At least he scored a point, which is better than a lot of the guys, all the guys that crashed. So exactly. There is that. But
he brought it home. He's safe. The bike's safe. That's about it.
Yeah, it's what it is. His teammate, though.
Yes, I know. So I was going to say a contrast, and it is becoming a regular thing now.
Very much so. Alesia's really getting the most out of that bike. Qualified fourth for Aprilia's best ever MotoGP qualifying and finished the race in seventh. This kind of sixth to tenth is sort of, if Alesia scores under that, you're like, that was quite disappointing.
Yeah.
If Alesia scores above that, you're like, great weekend. But sixth to tenth, that's sort of what it feels like Alesia's position on the Aprilia is this year.
It's kind of become his like stable.
Yeah.
Where he's just going to be.
Just consistent, getting reasonable points, just chipping away and just showing that he really is the guy to be on that bike right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he came through qualifying one. Looked good. I was a bit surprised he was in qualifying one.
Yeah, it was unexpected, actually.
Yeah, I thought at that point, I was like, it's going to be a dull weekend for these boys.
Yeah, quite.
And then he goes and does, puts it on fourth.
Yeah.
And then, like you say, just has a good, steady ride to seventh.
Yeah.
And like I say, it's just becoming his position, his sort of top of the road. And if that's where they're now going to sit, or with Aleix.
If that's their baseline now, wow, the improvement from last year.
Incredible, mate. And like say, if we get this scenario where Dovi comes in and can equal Aleix or better it, then they're in a prime position just to leap to the next step.
Yeah.
Great things will come. I'm sure it will. Hoping it will. They finally listen.
Yeah, exactly. After all these years, free advice we've been giving them.
Yeah, I'm sure their tech bloke is in there, like looking at his watch, is like, podcast will be out soon.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, right, Wednesday, midday, UK time, podcast will be out. I better listen to see what they're saying about us.
Right. Then he gets that email, meeting at 9 a.m. at noon. I'm doing my research in a little while.
God, if that is actually the case, then maybe you should come on the show or send us some money, either or. I'd be happy with either.
Yeah, drop us a line. Yeah. We'll gladly have you on.
Exactly. So then the other Italian manufacturer, Steve, and these are the guys that I predicted, and I think
we were both quite
sure that they were going to have the rule the roost over the weekend. They were going to be the kings of Mugello. Mm. But that was not the case. Ducati, and actually, to be fair, when I was ranking these last four, the Ducati, Suzuki, Yamaha, and KTM, it was quite hard in which order to put them. So I kind of went with first, second. I mean, it was four manufacturers, wasn't it? Yamaha won the race, so I put them first. A KTM came second, put them second.
Yeah.
Other manufacturer, who were Suzuki, came third. Third it is, and then Ducati were fourth.
Yeah, that's basically in my head when I was looking at the race, how I figured it would come down.
Yeah.
But like I say, not what we expected at all.
No.
We both, and I think a lot of people around the world, were expecting Ducati domination. And they've run the race there for the last 3 years on the bounce.
Yeah, exactly.
Top speed track. Ducati, hello.
Quite.
You know, we were all expecting probably a Ducati lockout at the podium.
Yeah, I was. I am so shocked that, I mean, none of them got on it at all.
Yeah.
Let alone that they didn't win the race and just completely dominate.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't have really a dismal weekend. But for what could have been, they did have a dismal weekend.
Compared to what we expected, I think it was a terrible weekend. And I think it does start to put the fears for the championship in there, because this is the Ducati track. The last, like you say, the last 3 years, it's been won by a different Ducati rider. So it's not even like one rider's great around there. Clearly the bike is great around there.
Yep.
And if they can't win on tracks that are traditionally Ducati tracks, then does beg the question for the rest of the year, really, are they going to have... But that said, they've won at tracks this year that Ducati haven't
exactly
traditionally
been
good at.
Thinking.
Yeah.
It's becoming a very, very strange year where, like, without giving too much away, a bike won this race this year, which I would have never have guessed.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I have already said that Yamaha won, to be fair.
So. No, that's true. No one was expecting it. And if you look at the podium that we got, whoever picked that, whoever went in the bookies and said, right, three different manufacturers.
Yeah, quite. And none of them are going to be a Ducati.
Yeah. The bookie would have looked at you and gone, stealing your money, mate.
Yeah, exactly. And actually, you only have to look at the fantasy squad and see what people's average score was for this weekend. A lot of people must have thought Ducati were going to be good, because the average scores are much lower than they have been over previous weekends.
Yes, mine still is not coming up. I am going down.
Still,
because I still haven't had all of my riders finish the damn race.
But that's okay, because you are falling down. But as more people are joining the league, which is still growing, actually, it means that there's still plenty of room to fall. So you're still only a few spots.
It just means my climb to the top
is going
to
be a long, hard slog at this point. It's
going to be a fall. I've got some serious climbing to do. I need to go have a word with the mountaineer and just like, how do we do this?
Yeah, exactly.
Or I'm just going to have to ring an analysis from the MotoGP paddock and just say, right, who's going to win next week?
They're going to be like, mate, I wish we knew.
The commentators were actually speaking about this on BT Sport at the minute and saying, BT Sport at the weekend.
Yeah.
And they were saying, like, who can predict what's going to happen at the minute?
And that's it, because it's so tough. Like, this podium wasn't a predictable one at all.
No.
And it's just, MotoGP has just become so competitive that it's just, like, it changes weekend to weekend, really.
Yeah. Let's get back to Ducati.
How
they fared this weekend.
I do have a quick complaint. It's not really a complaint, just an observation.
I have the same one.
Yeah, it's sad, man. I wanted to see another Lamborghini livery on the Pramac. I've got quite used to seeing that over the last few years, and not one this year.
No, we're not the only ones as well. Again, as is mentioned, everyone was like, where's the yellow and black? Where's the Lambos on the Pramacs? Just didn't appear. And it's Ducati track, come on.
Yeah.
You're in Italy. Get some Lambos down there. Get Lorenzo. Where is he? Yeah. Ubering it out. I drove it to the track.
Yeah, exactly.
Spangangly jacket that will blind anyone within 5 miles.
God, ridiculous spikes on it. Like, he's not really got over his teenage goth period.
He's probably only just hit it.
Yeah. FBA's it. Lorenzo retires and goes full goth.
Full goth. He's just got a shit ton of money, so he's going to buy whatever he wants.
Yeah.
He's like, that's the ultimate goth jacket. I'm having it.
Next time we see him, he'll be there stomping around in his new rocks with his, like, black mascara and eyeliner on, purple lipstick, long black hair, long leather jacket full of spikes. That'll be Lorenzo.
That's just his makeup, mate, for the Masked Singer.
Oh, yeah, I forgot he was on that.
Dressed up as a crow or something.
He was dressed up as a crow. Yeah. That pretty goth, you see.
Pretty goth. We hit it, mate. We found it. You heard it here first.
The Ducatis, then. Let's run through, I guess, from the third tier Ducati team first, because there's some interesting things to talk about here.
Yes.
Firstly, we'll discuss Luca Marini. Qualified 17th, finished in 17th. Considering the amount of fallers, considering he's an Italian on the Ducati in Italy, not a good race for him.
No, I would have got out of there pretty quick.
Yeah. Yes, he's on an old machine, but this old machine won the race in previous years. So,
I don't know. I don't really know what to make of him yet. I'm hoping that he's going to change.
I'm hoping he's a slow burn.
Yeah, I'm hedging my bets, and we're going to see that slow first year.
Yeah,
that real torrid first year where it's just like, this ain't going to happen. And then next year he just pulls it all together somehow. And even if he just starts finishing 10th,
yeah, he's consistently in the top 10, yeah, scoring decent points. That's kind
just of whatever you do. Learn from all this, even if, like you say, you qualify in 17th, you race at 17th. Whatever you do, take all this on board.
I'm sure Rossi is saying the same thing, because he's like, it's going to be fucking awkward if I have to fire him.
Yeah. He's probably having a word with it. What is it, Lucio, his mate? For fuck's sake, put something in the contract.
Yeah, he's like, if I have to fire him, mate, you're going to have to do it. I can't be telling him.
Yeah. But then in the small print at the bottom, there's got to be that bragging rights clause at the bottom, which means if I do have to fire you, I can look at you and go, ha ha, wanker.
Yeah. Siblings, eh?
Yes. Beat you.
Yeah. But his teammate in Enea Bastianini, this is the interesting one. Enea Bastianini qualified 14th. And I've actually put did not start here. That's not true. He did start the race. He just didn't finish the race. But he had a very strange start to the race.
I think that's one way of describing it. So he's eventful. He kicked off the events of the race.
Yeah, that's fair. The talking point, really. The most exciting bit of it all was just the whole, what the fuck happened there? Because we saw the aftermath of what occurred and then didn't really see it until halfway through the race when we got a replay.
Because all we saw was just Bastianini on his hands and knees in the middle of the track as everyone's lining up on the grid.
Yeah, so his warm-up lap happens, the camera's panning around, and then there's Bastianini's bike just sliding down the straight, and there's Bastianini on his hands and knees just waving his arms around.
Yeah.
And then about partway through the race, we get this nice replay, we see what happens, and he came out the final corner, and everyone is, doing the usual on the way to the grid. They're hard accelerating, anchoring on the brakes, getting the final bits of heat into the tyres, into the brakes, but also setting up their launch control systems. Yeah. You need to anchor the brakes on to compress the forks to get the launch control on. So everyone's doing that, including Johann Zarco. And then Bastianini just seemed to storm up behind Zarco, who was anchoring the brakes on. And it's like he didn't expect Zarco to be stopping. And Bastianini was coming fast into the back of him, so had to grab a massive handful of brake to try and slow himself down. But in the process, flipped himself up and over the front wheel, but almost pulled an entire somersault in it, because his back then slammed into the back of Zarco's bike, breaking the lunchbox, as we saw later in the race. And then he's just there laying on the floor waving his arms around. And Zarco, you see him look over his shoulder and be like, that was fucking weird. What happened there? And he stopped. He looked at his lunchbox. But he went, nah, or the salad box. And he's like, nah, I think I'm good. So Zarco did still start the race. But it was a weird one.
No one expected it. At this point in time, everyone's doing the same thing.
Everyone does it every single week. Yeah. That's how they arrive at the grid. They're slamming the brakes on, they're flicking the bike around, they're getting everything ready. But it was weird, he didn't expect it.
I think I can't remember who it was. One of the commentators said he must have been looking at his dash.
He was Neil Hodgson on BT Sport, said that.
And that is the only scenario I can come up with.
Yeah, and it would only take a split second.
Yeah.
Look down, look up. We've all done it driving before or riding a motorbike before when you've been distracted just for a split second looking at the speedo or looking at the radio or looking at something out the window. Yeah. And you come back and the car in front's anchoring its brakes on it. Fuck! And you really have to slam on.
That's exactly what happened. He's just looked up. His gaze has been drawn somewhere else for something. Could have even been thinking, right, I must engage my own launch device.
Yeah.
And just that split second was just enough. And he's got a pile on the front anchors. Couldn't do it. Over the top.
Yeah.
And just slams it at the back of Zarco. But how good would it have been if he'd have just landed on the salad box in a sitting position?
Oh, my God. You imagine if he was just a perfect pillion. Yeah. That would have been the greatest
just
trick.
On the back. You imagine the TV, the social
especially
media.
If his bike just then cruised still on its wheels and just carried on past.
Yeah, just nipped through the field and was off on its own.
Oh, imagine how dangerous that could have been, though, because everyone's lining up on the grid. Yeah, just the bike slamming through, yeah.
Could have been awful. But it's so many scenarios. And he came out and he blamed Zarco.
Yeah,
we
was
were
a
discussing
weird
this
thing,
before
wasn't
we started recording. And he's like, I can't remember exactly what he said.
I think he said, like, for me, Zarco did a very silly thing or something, was what
How
he was describing.
He doing a silly thing?
Yeah, exactly.
You
he's
know
like,
what everyone's doing, you mug. Stop blaming someone else for your fuck up.
Yeah, exactly. And if everyone's doing it, no one else is crashing into anyone doing it.
Yeah.
So I think, like, the only person to blame here is Inea. And, but he, I don't know, maybe it's that fired up, the adrenaline, the embarrassment.
The thing is, though, it's just pure embarrassment.
Yeah.
I have done the ultimate fuck up.
Yeah.
I've got to try and get this egg off the face.
Exactly.
So I'm going to blame everyone but me, and I'm going to stick to that, and that's it.
Yeah, that's exactly the case.
But we all know the truth, mate. You fucked it.
Yeah, quite.
Big time.
So then let's move on to the Pramac squad. Michele Pirro riding in place of Jorge Martin. He qualified 16th and finished the race in 13th.
Yes.
Just a fairly average outing for Pirro, really.
Yeah, just knows the track. Done a lot of laps, knows the bike.
Yep.
Like you've put in the notes, he was riding around in ninth until he decided to go on an off-track excursion.
Yeah, the final few laps, he had that big, I can't remember which corner it was, but he then lost, you know, four or five spots from that.
Yeah, dipped down. He didn't lose any more. No damage to the bike.
Yeah, so exactly. It was just a
ride
of gravel. Exactly.
Yeah. Not a bad day at the office. Better than some.
Better than some, exactly. His teammate, Johann Zarco, though, had a cracking, another cracking weekend for the Pramac team and for Ducati as a whole, really. Qualified third, finished the race in fourth in the end. Obviously, we've just discussed the bike was damaged and that must have been having a slight effect.
It must have done something.
Even just a minor aerodynamic effect. But now aero is becoming so important in MotoGP that's going to have an effect. And even that, you know, you lose, I don't know, 3 or 4% efficiency, you're going to be noticing that.
Yeah, even 1%, it's all going to affect these and add up over the course of the race.
Yeah.
But you did see it when he was back in Parc Fermé. The salad box, the bottom of it and the sort of side, I think, we're flapping around.
Yeah, it's all
this
cracked.
This is going to do something. He's lucky, actually, that something
didn't fly off and break. Yeah, he could have quite easily got the meatball flag.
Yeah, or we don't know fully what electronics is under there, but let's just say, for instance, it affected like his electronics.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, we literally don't know what's in there, do we?
No.
So it could be anything. But yes, if it was electronics, if he could have cracked an ECU very
could
easily.
Have done anything.
That's traction control. That could be your launch control. Like, there's a lot that could have been.
Anti-wheelie.
Like,
he could have pulled the... twisted the throttle at the next corner and just high-sided it badly.
Yeah, you remember Pedrosa after Marquez cut his traction control lead?
That's exactly it. If that had happened, it could have been nasty.
Yeah, I say Marquez cut his traction control lead like it was a deliberate ploy.
Have you not seen that clip where he's got the old scissors out?
Gotcha. He's just there with his leather man, just like cutting away.
Yeah, just slow down, mate. I've still got the bloody case on.
Yeah.
You know what those are like to get off?
Yeah, quite. Breaking your fingernails, trying to get the knife out.
Oh, they're a bastard, aren't they?
Yeah.
You remember the Swiss Army knives your granddad used to give you as a kid? The little teeny tiny,
the tiny ones, yeah.
You had to get another knife out the cupboard to get the bloody knife out.
I used to have to bite them and then you start chipping your teeth trying to get out.
I've still got a chip on the top right one where I did exactly that. It's just like a little sharp bit that nothing has ever happened to.
Yeah.
And it's exactly that. It's like a little red and white thing. And I think it was trying to get that little toothpick out, the white bit on the side.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Tough. Oh.
But Zarco did finish as top Ducati in the end and really took control of the Ducati challenge after Pecco Bagnaia crashed out, which we will
make
come to
like
in a moment.
Separate race.
Yeah, well, I don't know. But it's because we kind of expected
Ducati, there was that many Ducatis on the grid. It could be a race.
Yeah, exactly. And we did expect them to just be 1-2-3 in this race. So the fact that they weren't, and the fact it was Zarco that was kind of leading the charge for them afterwards was a little bit surprising.
Maybe a sign of things to come, but...
Well, potentially. So Zarco, you know, after Pecco crashed, he did overtake Quartararo. He did have the lead for a little while, but, you know, it wasn't going to last. Quartararo was so fast through the twisty bits that, you know, he just had to get out in front and pull a gap before the straight. Quartararo was losing 3 or 4 tenths down the straight to Ducatis. So as long as he could get the overtake done in the first sector, and then he could make 3 or 4 tenths at least throughout the rest of the lap, he was safe along the straight, and he managed to do that pretty fast.
There's only two real significant points on that track that the Ducati can use as advantage. The rest of that track is all Yamaha and Suzuki territory.
Yeah, certainly.
Which we came to see. No one expected.
Yeah, exactly.
Not for the other bikes, anything but Ducati to be so good.
Yeah.
And it was just unfortunate that they were so good for them.
Yes.
There we go.
But a great weekend from Zarco again, once again proving that, or repaying, I guess, the faith Ducati put in him.
I guess so, yeah. I mean, they've given him the seat back, got it back in MotoGP.
Exactly. And they're going to, well, it's revitalised his career after the torrid half season with KTM. He was kind of, you could argue he's very lucky to be in MotoGP now.
Yeah, you don't get many second options. I always think of like the career of John Hopkins.
Yeah.
And when he got a second go round, I think it's very, very lucky.
Yeah.
Quite a bit different scenario with Zarco, but he's still got another go at it.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly the case. So let's move on to the factory squad, Steve. We've mentioned Pecco Bagnaia crashing out, so we'll go through that one first. He qualified second and, like I say, crashed out of the race. He was looking fast and he was challenging Quartararo and just looked really, really good until he crashed out on the second lap.
Yeah, very early on. I'm pretty sure he was overriding 100%. Just to stay with.
I think he had the lead at the time, didn't he? Wasn't he in first when he crashed?
Yeah, I'm sure he just found himself in a good position, knew he wouldn't be out holder, and just went for the pull the pin early.
Yeah. And like we say, he had to make the time up. Like, yes, on the straight, he's going to get full tenths, but we know Quartararo was making up more than that in the twisty bits. Yeah, so he had to do everything he could to stay in front. And arguably, this was like the Dovi-style race, wasn't it? He could have gone for that Dovi tactic of slow the race down. Just put the bike right on the apex of every single corner. You'll have a Yamaha on your tailpipes for the entire race. But as long as you don't leave an inch, he can't get past you.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunate.
Yeah.
He's in my dream team.
Yeah, me too. But it's a big blow for his championship as well, because you've got to think he was quite close to the championship lead going into this, and he's now 26 points behind us.
I was going to say, it's a big number now.
Yeah.
So all work to be done, but he's looking like he can claw it back.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, arguably can. We've seen him. He's had a very good year so far. And again, he was very fast here. The race was looking really, really good. It was looking like it could have been quite a fair and bashing race between him and Quartararo.
Yeah, a little bit gutted we didn't actually get to see it, because we haven't properly seen that battle yet.
We haven't really seen Quartararo really battle anyone.
Not properly.
Not like for a full race battle. I mean, we saw him fight with Marquez a few times, and Marquez always stumped him in the final laps. But a lot of Quartararo's wins just come from hitting the front and going, the Lorenzo style.
That's exactly what I was going to say. It's very similar to his style. But if it works, it works.
Yeah, exactly.
So there we are.
That's it. Then Jack Miller, his teammate, qualified fifth and finished the race in sixth overall. Never really had the pace to challenge for the win, but didn't pull the classic Miller move of pushing too hard and crashing and not maximising what he could do.
It felt like a more conservative ride, a more calculated...
Felt like he's looking at a championship.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was about to say. I think someone has either had a word, or he's looked at it, assessed it, and thought, well, this is all I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Let's just take the points we can get.
Yeah, he threw away a good result in Portimao. He had, obviously, a couple of bad rounds at the start of the season. So, you know, now it's time to, if you can't win, you just got to take the points. And it's kind of the...
You can't keep pushing and risking to bin it if you want a championship.
Yeah, exactly. It felt like the kind of Mir style race, didn't it? Let's just get the most I can. But I don't know if that's going to be enough this year.
I don't either. I can't see him winning the championship.
No, I think he's in too much of a hole, especially with how Quartararo is performing at the moment. Quartararo has come well up to pace and is performing very well. And I think it's going to be hard for Miller to consistently score points and get a title here. He needs to be going out and beating Quartararo week in, week out.
Oh, I really, really like Jack Miller as a rider. I think he's really talented. I think
he's one of my favourite guys in the grid, without a doubt.
But he never strikes me as a championship winner.
Yeah, I agree.
Which is a real shame. It's a real shame. But you never know. We could be wrong. We're only amateurs, so we'll see.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Right, Steve, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will dive into the last three factories.
Let's go for it.
Good stuff, guys. Bear with us one moment and we will be right back with you. Thank you for bearing with us there, guys. We are back. Fresh beers, which actually I opened before we started recording again. So I can't even give you the sound of it opening, sadly, today.
Bad form.
Yeah, we really let the side down on that one, Steve.
I would open a third one, but it's a school night. So.
It's a school night. Can't have more than two.
No, got to be a good boy.
So Suzuki then. Suzuki finishing third overall in our standings and also standing third place on the podium. During the race, both Suzukis were stuck behind Jack Miller for what felt like an age.
It did feel like a long time.
But it was only about eight laps, but it felt like a really long time. It must have felt like a really long time for them.
It just felt like they had the pace to get past the Ducati from the off.
Yeah.
Which made it seem worse because they always felt like they were bunched up, being slowed down. And like you said, frustrating for us. Must have been hell for them.
Yeah, can you imagine?
Imagine being under their helmet. Must be like so infuriating because they were stuck behind Miller and he's hard to pass at the best of times. They put him on a track where you're completely reliant on the infield.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're reliant on the person in front of you.
Yep.
To get past him. I wouldn't be able to do it. I'd be crashing just trying to get past.
Yeah, quite. I'd be crashing just by looking at the bikes, I think. I have no faith that I'd be able to stay on one of these bikes for a single lap. So
I think we'd just fall over in pit lane, mate. If someone said we could have a
go. I'd break my ankle just in excitement running over to the bike.
Yeah, like, yippee. Oh, fuck.
Yeah. So Johan Mir qualified ninth and his teammate Alex Rins qualified eighth. Again, this is kind of a standard qualifying position, I think, for the Suzukis.
We said
really.
Exactly that last show.
Yeah,
this
there
is
we
just
go.
Where they are.
Yeah.
This is their standard. They could do well from these positions as well.
Yeah, they can.
They could build on it. They've got great race pace. And this is anything less is like, well, hang on, what's going on?
Yeah, exactly. But anything more, you're like, whoa, the Suzukis are on it.
They're on fire. Let's go for it. Yeah, it's just weird. You look at it both ends. They're lower, you go, hang on. They go higher, they go, woohoo.
Yeah, exactly. So Alex Rins then, like I say, qualified eighth. And had a good race performance and was doing very well. He was up there around the podium, if not on the podium positions, actually, for some of it.
I think he was in fourth.
Okay. And then he had, once again, a crash from a high-scoring position for the fourth race in a row. Alex Bins is in the gravel.
Back again. Pushing too hard again.
Pushing too hard again, Steve. This is what we've discussed. We've discussed this while recording. We've discussed this when you and I just chat about MotoGP.
Yep.
He's just trying to compete with Johan Mir. And
I think he's just letting the pressure get to him now.
That
and
seems
I think
to be the
he's
case.
Absolutely piling the pressure on himself.
It feels a bit Vinales-y, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. Win it or bid it. And take a fifth. Take a sixth. Whatever you can get at this point, just finish the bloody race.
Yeah, just take the fucking points.
Yeah, one point would be good.
Well, exactly.
Bringing it home, I bet the team would pat you on the back and take you out for pizza.
Yeah, quite.
Just don't crash the damn thing.
Mm.
Yeah, at this point, your title hopes are over for this year.
Oh, 100%. I mean, he probably wasn't going to win all of the races he's crashed out of, but he was in a good position. So say he gave away, I don't know, three podiums or four podiums, so they're all third places. That's still 60 points.
Exactly.
That's a huge chunk of points in the championship.
Exactly. He's just pushing himself. He's getting a sniff of something. Every time he sees a podium, he sees a person in front of him, another rider. It's like, right, I want that position.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what the cost or what condition your tyres are in or what the ability of yourself and the bike and the combination of the two is on the day. It's, I'm going to override this. And it's becoming infuriating for us to watch at home.
Yeah, 100%.
What he must be feeling, what the team must be feeling, God knows.
And well, I mean, you saw it, didn't you? He was there after the crash against the tyre wall, kicking it in frustration. He looked very, very fed up with the situation. So, I mean, he understands what he's doing at the moment, but he doesn't really seem to understand how to stop doing it.
No, slow down. Be more conservative.
Slow down. Yeah, exactly.
If he crashes this weekend at Catalonia, I am sure he's going to take his lid off and batter something.
His own head.
Probably the bike.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure, I'm not saying he would, but at this point, it feels like the excuses are going to start flowing.
Mm. And he's got another year on his contract, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, which is lucky, because otherwise Suzuki would be looking at him being like...
I'm pretty sure they're probably already looking down that road.
They're looking at the get-out clauses, but I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I also think Suzuki are a very loyal factory. They have certainly proven to be.
Absolutely.
So they're not going to be bidding him off early, I don't think, but they might not be renewing his contract at the end of next year unless he fucking sorts his shit out.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see a replacement being lined up.
Yeah.
You know, Sylvain Gintoli's out because he's been working for BT Sport, but...
I mean, he's still their test rider, though. He's still a Suzuki test rider.
Imagine that. I've got to go. I have a job to do.
Well, I mean, look at Stefan Bradl.
Yeah, he did exactly that.
Yeah. He went from being a pundit for German TV to then all of a sudden being a test rider or replacement rider for Honda for an entire season.
Yeah, just imagine that. Sitting at your desk, your mic piece goes, get your leathers on. What? What show's this?
Yeah, exactly. I'll be like, fucking right, I'm in for a good night.
Yeah, only fans, here we come.
So Johan Mir then qualified ninth and did score a podium in the end, finished third. This was just a very much like his performances last year, wasn't it? It was just very much just do what you can, the race is going to come to you, and he's just getting the most out of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, fast at the end as he was all of last year and scoring the podiums again. And it's only his second podium so far this year. He's quite a long way off the title fight at the moment, but it's not impossible for him to get back there.
No.
He's not going to get back there with consistency, though. He needs race wins.
Yeah. This year, he is going to have to step it up.
Yeah.
It's not going to be the same as last year. He's riding intelligent races. That's obvious to see.
Yeah.
And he is looking like the Mir of last year. But. This year, the pressure is going to be on. He needs some wins, and I would say at least four.
It's going to be a high... if you're going to be Quartararo this year, you're going to need a lot of wins.
Yeah, and you want to be pushing him.
Yeah.
You need to be closer. If anything, I think Mir needs to be on the second row minimum.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if he can start on the second row, then and if he's in the top five or six, you know, going into the first or second lap, he's in for a good shot here.
Just get a good launch.
Just get
a good launch and just use the corner speed and stability and braking of this Suzuki.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it may not be the fastest thing in the world, but we're coming to tracks where you don't have to be the fastest.
Yes, that's exactly the case.
So with any luck over the next two or three rounds, we're going to see him pick up a win. But I think it's going to be a big push for him to do that.
Yeah, certainly.
But it will make an interesting battle.
Oh, it really will. There was an interesting point as well just after the race this week where Johan Mir finished third on track, but then Oliveira, who finished second on track, was demoted to place for exceeding track limits. And then it came out that Mir had also exceeded track limits, so got demoted to place back again, promoting Oliveira back to second and Mir back to third.
It was all a bit higgledy-piggledy.
Yeah, it was a bit of a confusing one. I was like, what's the fuck's happened here? I was trying to work it out. I'm like, but surely Zarco should get the position?
A lot of people said that because it should have kept on going down.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because that's not the way it works. Because the way it works, and it's if it was the computer doing this, is who broke the rule first? Right, Oliveira broke the rule first. Oliveira gets punished, drops the spot. Who broke the rule second? Yeah. Oh, Mir broke the rule second, gets punished, drops the spot. But because the spot's already been swapped because of the first punishment, they just get swapped back.
It's really annoying. We saw the camera replay of this.
I mean, they were shit as well. It's one of those, much like in Moto2, like maybe gains a thousandth of a second or something.
Gain nothing. Yeah. Absolutely nothing. It's quite pathetic. And this is where I completely get the riders get frustrated with it.
But I'm still on board with it. Yeah. I would still rather this is it. The rules are rules. They're black and white. There's no interpretation. Because when you get interpretation, eventually you get favoritism. You get accused of, and we saw this a lot during Rossi's domination, they're making the rules for Rossi. They want Rossi to win. I mean, we started getting it in Marquez. They're making the rules for Marquez. So they did, in Marquez's case, they were actually making rules to try and slow him down. But, you know, you will see that the favouritism will come into it, whether it's real or whether it's accused. It doesn't matter. It does affect the sport. So I am very pro black and white rules. No fucking about. You broke it. You're punished.
Yeah. At the end of the day, they both still got on the podium, which is bloody lucky.
Yeah.
Deal with it. Mm-hmm. Basically, don't do it again. Learn from it. We know when they're pushing. They're so close to the limit anyway.
Yeah.
But you're just going to have to learn to adapt.
Yeah, that's it.
You know, as you know that they're not going to change. Just get this into your head. When you're pushing, you're just going to have to adapt to the situation. And if you end up losing a place because you've pushed too hard, you lose a place because you pushed too hard.
Exactly.
You're not going to change the outcome. Don't go banging on the boss's door. I want my place back, because you're not going
to
get it.
Yep, quite. I mean, you can go to the stewards all you like, but...
yeah, they're just going to laugh at you, put the kettle on and go, fuck off.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever language that is.
Let's move on to the Austrian factory then, KTM. KTM, new upgrades this race. They had a new chassis, which seemed to have a huge, huge impact. And it was like, oh my God, it's like the KTM of last year.
Yes.
You're watching it, you're like... shit, they're lighting up the timing screens. Brad Binder got the fastest ever speed recorded on a MotoGP bike.
We saw that come up, didn't we? That was Saturday.
Yeah.
We were at the races, and I said to you the fastest, you know, the new fastest lap has been set.
And I was like, oh, which Ducati was it?
Yeah. I got you to guess. I was like, guess who it was?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, pop quiz on Tim all of a sudden. MotoGP facts.
And Brad Binder on the KTM was going to be nowhere near my my top of my guest list.
I saw it come up, and you often see these things come up on social media, don't we? Just funnies and bloody memes or whatever they are. I was like, that's not actually a joke. I was like, damn, that's on the MotoGP website.
Yeah.
I was like, bloody hell. So it shows whatever they did with that.
Well, exactly. Yeah, I mean, we know they've got a good engine anyway, and obviously whatever happened with the chassis, and let's not forget, they also had a symmetric tyre, hard tyre that they like this weekend, that front tyre. They didn't have the asymmetric, which they were struggling with a lot. So maybe that also had a huge amount to do with it.
Oh, definitely.
But the new chassis, the right tyre, good grunt, meant they got the launch onto the straight and they were hitting those speeds. And we saw it actually that the Ducatis could not overtake the KTMs along the straight. Anyone else wasn't a problem, but not the KTMs.
No. So with any luck, as long as the chassis will be there, they can use it. As long as they still get this tyre,
yeah,
they'll be absolutely fine now.
And I mean, if they don't get this tyre, sort of boohoo. We've had 6 rounds now. Only one of them has had a tyre that suits your bike. So maybe it's time to build your bike that suits the other 5 races. Yeah. Rather
even
than
with the chassis upgrade, hopefully, whatever that does, how it changes the bike, they can use that upgrade.
They were saying, I think Oliveira was saying, that it was making the tyres, it was kinder on the tyres, less tyre wear.
Yeah.
So then, yes, certainly the late race pace is going to be heavily improved for that.
Yes. So, we'll see. We're coming into a very corner speed effective series of tracks.
Yeah, it's true. But then Catalunya that we're coming up to next, very corner speed. But much like Mugello, Ducatis have had success there in the past. There's got a long straight. It's quite a power track as well. So, I think the KTMs, providing they get the tyres, are going to be pretty potent there too.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they are. So, we'll see. We'll see what can happen. If they don't have the tyres, we'll see what this new chassis could do on its own.
Yep. Exactly.
Interested to see what happens.
But throughout the weekend, Ike Lekuona qualified 20th, finished 11th. Didn't really see anything of him.
No.
Haven't really got a lot to say.
No. Move on.
Much like Danilo Petrucci. Danilo Petrucci qualified 18th. Finished in 9th, though, so had a good progression forward. Didn't really see much of him.
No, everyone was concentrated at the front, were they?
Yeah, they were. I'm a bit disappointed on how little of these KTM, the Tech 3 KTMs we've seen.
We keep saying this, though.
So good looking.
We keep saying this, that we're just not seeing it. I know you could pay for the video pass and you can get the individual rider cams and you can see more of them, but I'm not going to pay for that because we've already spoken about monetizing stuff and paying for bills on top of bills. I'm not going to do it. But I do really want to see more of these KTMs.
Mm.
Really do.
I just want to see them fighting up the front, just so we see them naturally and organically on the screen a lot, because they're a stunning, stunning looking machine.
All right. I'm sure it'll come. We're getting some upgrades now.
Yeah.
You know, the results are going to change, so I'm sure it's going to happen. And the day it does happen, I know my phone's going to blow up with you sending me messages saying, look at this!
That's fair. If I've got time, it might just be me and my box of Kleenex.
Sorry. It could be. If that's the case, just I don't want to know.
Back to the OnlyFans thing again.
I was going to say, just make sure you stick that video on OnlyFans. And even now, I'm not going to look at that either.
No, I'll give you the free logins, mate. Don't worry about it. So then the factory boys, Brad Binder qualified sixth, finished the race in fifth. Did have the aforementioned contact with one Mark Marquez on lap two. And that collision actually caused Binder's airbag to go off. So he had an entire lap with his airbags almost completely inflated. And he said, and I didn't realize how strong these are, but he was describing it. And he's like, all the riders know, once your airbag goes off, you can't breathe. There's no room for your lungs to expand. He's like, you can't bend your limbs properly. You can't tuck in on the bubble. So he's saying he's doing 200 plus miles an hour. And he's not even tucked in on the bubble. So he's got, I think he'd said that his helmet, just because the air pressure, was moving 2 or 3 centimeters closer to his face.
That's insane.
Which is incredible. He's just saying it's so hard to ride like that. But after a lap, thankfully, you know, the airbag went back down. He could get back into a comfortable position and he was good to go. And he was lapping pretty well. And like we say, finished fifth overall. So really not a bad result considering the run of form KTM have been on.
Yeah, that is a good result. It's a shame we didn't get to see Ollo. We got to sort of replay a bit of the collision. Would have been interested to see what he looked like on the bike.
Yeah, because I didn't really realise, actually, until the second time I watched the race, that Mark had even hit him.
Yeah, I didn't. I didn't until I saw one of the replays. We've all seen these guys walking away from the track, like when they've had an off. The airbag's gone off, you know. Like bloody
Johnny Bravo.
Yeah, definitely. I'd be interested to see how he sat on the bike. I'm sure if he hit him on the side, like the hip bags would have gone off.
Well, it just depends, doesn't it? Because it depends if he uses hip bags, because not all of them do.
You don't have to use them. But
but it's just the impact, isn't it? The computer went, what the fuck? We're not supposed to be doing this at this point of the track.
Impact, boom. Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's all computer control.
But like you say, how the hell did he tuck in behind that screen? He didn't.
Well, yeah, exactly. But he must have got down enough to still be doing 200 fucking miles an hour. Like,
yeah. Otherwise, he would have dropped like a stone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So he fought through that. And yes, very successfully fought through that and had a great race.
Yeah. Yeah.
His teammate in Miguel Oliveira, though, had an even better race.
He rode a blinder.
Qualified seventh, eventually finished second. The notes here, I've got KTM are back? Question mark. Because we're really not sure, are we? Is it the tyre? Is it the chassis? Is it just this circuit? There's still a lot of questions to be answered, but this was, considering the form we expected KTM to be on this year and the how they have performed, it's very nice to see them on the podium, see them scoring top 10s. I mean, they had three bikes in the top 10, four bikes in the top 11, and one of them was on the podium. So a really solid weekend from them.
Considering what's happened so far in the run of form last year, hopefully this is the start of things to come, but they did have a lot of boxes ticked for this weekend. But they will still have a couple of those ticked next weekend.
Yes.
So it's going to be interesting to see, is this just the turning point of what they need to get sorted?
Yeah, I don't know what the tyre allocation is for next thing. Can we find out the tyre allocations beforehand? Are they online?
I don't know.
Anywhere?
I've actually thought about this at the weekend, because the commentators on BT Sport were saying how they run out of tyres. I'm thinking, well, hang on.
I know Michelin give out the tyre allocations,
I'll
don't they?
I'll have to find out.
The circuit, but I don't know if we can just get them in advance.
I think we can. I think we can find out. We'll probably have to register like we've done with the manufacturers for press releases.
Maybe with Michelin. And go
So I think we'll have to do that, which we've done with some, just if anyone wants to know, we've done it with some of the manufacturers where we get their press releases. So
we tried it with all of them and some of them said no.
A couple of the bigger ones. Well, most of them said yes.
I think everyone said yes except Ducati.
Yeah, who basically just came back with a point stone. It was quite cold, actually.
You need to be accredited media to have access to these, whereas every other one just gave us a username and password to log into their media center without a problem.
Yeah, or there's one, I'm not going to name which one it is, which any Joe Blogs can just go on and download the media kit.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair. But I like that even more.
I like that even more because it's very free and the entire world has access to their media.
Yeah, so media for the, it's Suzuki, isn't it? We can just say it.
Yeah, we'll say it's Suzuki.
It's Suzuki, that's fine. But it's great because there is actually, guys, for you listening, obviously you can't use any of their photos for anything other than you guys for personal use, for your backgrounds and shit on your computers, that's fine, but you can't use it for anything commercial. Yeah. But if you want some great photos of Suzuki's, check out the Suzuki Media Kit because it's really, really good.
And, it is good.
And all the information is free. And I'm really pro that. You know me, Steve, I'm a bit of a socialist at heart. And I like the fact that they're just, there's no gatekeeper to the Suzuki media. They're just like, yeah, have it.
Yeah. Some are like barn doors.
Ducati.
Yeah, Ducati. And you cannot get in, which doesn't surprise me. Others were
the problem is with Ducati, wasn't it, that we got banned from just for asking. They just banned us for banned us from all of their teams. Whereas generally it was you had to ask each team for their media kit. But Ducati control everything in-house, and we're just like, nah. I think they were like, you need to be real media to have access to that.
That is the long and short what I said. You can't be a couple of sofa racers at home.
Yeah, exactly.
And there was no, thank you very much, the Ducati team, family.
Yeah.
It was just, God, I'll have to find it. We've got it somewhere, haven't we?
Yeah, it's in the inbox
somewhere. Have to put it on the Facebook group because it was hilarious. It was just basically like, are you fucking kidding?
Yeah, quite.
It would have been what I had written. As a reply, are you taking the piss? Basically, you want full access to us for your media, for your pocky, for your little teeny tiny podcast.
Yeah, exactly. So you two can talk and insult us for not winning enough.
Yeah, you basically say what you think. You have no relevance to anything and you want full access. Well, yeah.
And I mean, when you put it like that, that's sort of a fair point. We do have no relevance, so why would they let us? But everyone else did, because everyone else is
literally
nice.
Literally every other manufacturer was like, yeah, sure, help yourself.
Yeah.
Knock yourself out. Here you go. It's full access to our media debrief.
Oh, God, too funny. So I think the whole KTM weekend, and especially Miguel Oliveira's weekend, just a great way for KTM to be like, we didn't fuck it. We're not lost. We've not gone. We can still do this, and we will be title challengers in the future.
Yeah, there's still that. This show, just like one upgrade, one little bit, a couple of things come together, and they're back.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not just one bike.
It was all of them. Every bike improved. I mean, in qualifying, the Tech 3 boys weren't quite as good, but during the race, they both improved a lot. I mean, Ike Lecuona gained 9 places, as did Dino Petrucci, actually, and there wasn't 9 fallers. So, you know, good races.
Yeah, but like what you've got written down there in the notes is a perfect example of how teams should be. 2 factory at the top, 2 satellite at the bottom, separated by quite a big gap in qualifying.
Well, that was the traditional thing, wasn't it? But I like the modern way with like the Pramac and Petronas getting in and about it. I like the modern way that it's not quite so much anymore the factory thing.
So
but you're right, the factory has got the money and they can pay the best riders more. They can attract the best riders and they can do all the testing. Yeah. It's only changed recently because KTM are an example of this, actually, giving current year bikes to every single one of their riders.
Yeah, they're all there and it makes sense. Excuse me. They say traditionally that's how it would have been. Now, God knows what's going to happen because they're all on par, basically.
Yeah, and I mean, last year we were legitimately talking about the chance of a satellite rider winning the title. And I don't know if that's a conversation that's happened in MotoGP previously. But Rossi arguably won it on a satellite Honda, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, so yeah, it has happened in the past.
A long time ago, different sort of category, if you will.
But. Yeah. Still the MotoGP era, but a different rule set at the time as well.
Yeah, but this is the more traditional. Factory at the top, satellite at the bottom, given the right stuff, and they're all there.
Yeah.
They're perfect. Absolutely
exactly.
Perfect.
Right, Steve, let's move on to Yamaha.
Yeah,
start with the, I say the disappointing ones, the disappointing 3 riders for Yamaha, and I'm going to start with, and I'm sorry to say it, Steve, the most disappointing of the Yamaha riders here in one. Oh, you look angry already. In one, Valentino Rossi.
So Frankie Morbidelli.
I mean, arguably, maybe more disappointing in the race because did finish behind his teammate. But
but had a lot of bad luck.
Exactly. So we are going to discuss Valentino Rossi first.
Yes.
Qualified 19th at Mugello.
At one point in practice was stone cold.
In qualifying was stone cold last for most of it.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I don't know. I actually went out with the family yesterday. I bumped into a Rossi fan. There's a guy wearing a Rossi shirt.
Okay.
At the dinosaur park where we took the kids. Right. So, fair enough. Everywhere you go in the world, you can find a Rossi fan.
Yeah, exactly. You could be at some weird little dinosaur park in Norfolk. And let's get this fair. This isn't like Jurassic Park for anyone listening.
You're not going to get eaten.
It's all like fiberglass models and shit.
Yeah.
Really good Halloween nights there, though, if you've
very
been.
Good Halloween nights there. Yeah, scare the shit out of you. And your kids.
I went to the over 18s Halloween nights, which were really good, because then they're allowed to, like, grab you and, like, scream in your face and stuff. So, even better after a drink, because it's just a bit more terrifying.
I can't tell listeners what you just signaled to me. But it's not, you can't buy it over the counter.
Yeah. Oh, I'm not going to incriminate anyone here. Let's move on. Valentino Rossi, yeah, like we say, qualified 19th, did finish in 10th, so actually had a pretty solid race, but
there's a lot of fallers. But he did start towards the end of the race. He did. His pace was good.
But it's also fucking depressing that 10th place is a solid result for the 9-time world champion.
Exactly what we said last podcast. Uh-huh. This is what it's like. In mid-table now, is really good.
Yeah.
Time to call it a day, man. Let's go back to the Tuscan Hills. Let's have a barbecue. You've got your ranch.
I don't think he lives in the Tuscan Hills, actually. I don't
wherever
think.
The hell he lives.
Tivulia, but I don't Tivulia, think that's in the Tuscan Hills. I think it's near San Marino.
Yeah. Go back to Italy. please, mate, don't do it to us anymore. Thank you for the races. Thank you for the years. It's been wonderful.
Yeah.
Do your career the right thing, and let's just go out with a bang, not a glimmer.
Yeah.
And we'll see you when you're a team owner.
Next year, we'll see you again. You'll still be there,
Haddock. And we'll all be excited to see your face.
Yeah.
Go out gracefully.
Yes, exactly. And his teammate and protege in Franco Morbidelli then qualified 10th, but did have a torrid race, finishing 16th, just outside the points. But he ran off track on lap two because he was avoiding Marquez's bike at the time. Marquez's crash, Morbidelli had to avoid it and did end up riding through the gravel.
And it wasn't just like a little excursion.
It was all the way across, riding then, like, you know, close to the fence where it's tarmac again, and then having to find his way back onto the circuit. He lost a ton of time and was at the very back.
Yeah, by a long way. Yeah. So considering all of that, gutted not to get a point, but... Yeah.
It's been such an unfortunate year for Morbidelli so far.
He's had so much bad luck. So much bad luck. He should have had far better results than what he's had.
Mm.
He's just been tangled up in other people's mistakes.
Exactly.
But this is racing.
And the team are fully aware, and Yamaha will be fully aware as well, that this is not his level of performance. His level of performance is much higher than this. This is a blip. If his career does go down the pan, he can just do Herbal Essences adverts. So, like... He's got a future in shampoo adverts, I'm sure.
He's got, Jimi Hendrix lookalike.
Wow, yeah, good shout. He definitely plays guitar. Does he play guitar?
I'm sure he plays guitar. Zarko will teach him.
Yeah, fair point. Oh my God, Steve. I had the smooth talking Frenchman in Zarko and Morbidelli both like serenading me. I'd be like, oh, geez, I wouldn't know what was going on. I'm getting all flustered at the thought, Steve.
I've gone red in the cheeks.
I have gone red in the cheeks.
Sunburn, but
it's not sunburn. It's
earlier.
Not the beer. Honestly, it's just the idea of Morbidelli and Zarco.
Your clothes are off, Tim. Why are your clothes off?
Sorry, man. I'll just get them back on. It's amazing how quickly I can do that now. During the race and actually the weekend, it was incredible how slow Franco's bike was in comparison to the Ducatis and the KTMs.
I've forgotten about that, actually. Yeah. Slowest bike on the grid. By, I think, at 1.23, 24 kilometres.
Yeah, about 15 miles per hour down on the fastest guys. And, I mean, again, everyone's been there. Like, you've been driving on the motorway or the dual carriageway, and you've been cruising along, you've been cruising along at, like, 70, doing the speed limit, and you overtake someone that's doing 55 miles per hour. But you leave them fucking standing.
It's surprising how much faster that is.
Yeah.
We had it actually yesterday, coming back. We got back late, boys were tired, so I was giving a little bit. I sat at 80. I'd incriminate myself, 10 miles an hour over the speed limit. And this guy
was on private land.
This guy went past me like I was standing still. Mm-hmm. Really did. And then I sort of tried to work it out. I got a gauge from where he was, and I did a bit of quick math in my head by distance and all that crap.
You're better than me. I'd have just sped up to see how fast he was going.
Oh, he was gone.
Okay.
There was a car in front of me and then somebody else following him.
They were definitely racing.
They were racing. I just gave up. In my head, he was doing about 25 miles an hour quicker than me.
Yeah, and they're gone. Vroom. It's a chunk of speed,
like,
man.
A missile. I felt like I was standing still.
Yeah.
So what these guys must feel like when you're racing and you're giving it full chat and these guys just come steaming past you.
Yeah, so frustrating.
Point, I'd
as
probably
well,
just hit that red kill switch.
Because that's the thing, isn't it? You're like, what's the fucking point?
Yeah, it must be infuriating. And you've got to see this race after race.
Yeah.
Because it's not just Mugello where it's a long straight. We see this Ducati advantage down the straights at all straights. Yeah. all right, some it's only the last couple of meters.
But it doesn't matter. It's there.
It's still there. You can't escape it. And it doesn't matter how hard you break. You've then got to break so much deeper.
Exactly.
This weekend in free practice, everyone's trying to keep up the Ducatis. Breaking deeper. Oh, look, turn one, gravel trap.
Yeah, making mistakes all over the place. And even if you don't hit the gravel trap, you run wide. But you run wide, you're off the power for longer. It takes you longer to get back on the power. When you do, you've dropped, you know, 3 or 4 tenths. Job done.
Drop 2 places.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the point?
And like we said, that 3 or 4 tenths is what the Ducati is going to make up on you on the straight. So if you've just lost that after the straight, you've now lost nearly a second.
Exactly. Give up, go home, park the deck chair, get the Barbie on.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go on to the factory squad then, Steve. Maverick Viñales will be the one to talk about first. Qualified 13th after his little issues with Marquez in Q1.
Yes.
And then finished the race in 8th place.
Classic Mav.
Classic Mav, it is classic Mav, isn't it? Like, we really expected, well, I don't know if we did expect, I think we were optimistic that maybe we had like a Maverick 2.0 this year. After that win in Qatar, that first round, we were like, okay, maybe
something's changed.
Yeah, something's different here, but nah.
I thought we might see a fired up Mav after the antics of qualifying.
Yeah, that I sort of thought we'd see something, but it just never materialised.
No, it just all kind of simmered.
I think
the best way, it just sort of sat.
And then at the end of the race, Steve, do you know what?
What?
He's one of the fastest guys on track, wasn't
exactly.
he?
Exactly, as always. And we said this like last year, the year before that. How infuriating must that be for the team?
Yeah, exactly. Imagine if it was just time trials. Like, you've got to do 25 laps, and then your lap time on the final lap is how you set the grid.
He's golden.
World champion.
Yeah. Absolutely golden. But imagine sitting in that pit, just looking at the clock, thinking, right, he's in 15th. He's a second off the pace. 2 laps to go. He's 1.3 faster than everyone.
Yeah, it's so annoying, isn't it?
But he's sat in 7th.
Yeah, and he's got an 8-second gap to 6th.
Yeah, it's like, why can't you do this at the start of the race?
Yeah.
I would be tearing my hair out, and I wouldn't know what to say. The minute he came back in, I think after this much time, I would probably just, like, leave.
I don't know what you do at this point.
Yeah, like, what do you say? Clearly, how do you approach it?
Yeah, this is a pattern of behaviour. It's a body of work. Like, this is just Mav.
Yeah.
If you're going to hire him, you know he's going to do this most races. So you just suck it up and I guess you don't say anything.
Yeah, what do you do? You can't do anything. And it doesn't seem to matter what they do. It's always there.
Yeah.
It is just him. And I think this is the way his career in MotoGP is going to go. He's going to be a nearly man.
Yeah. That'll be exactly it. He'll be, I mean, not even on the same level as Danny Pedrosa, but that kind of, he'll win a ton of races.
When Danny was in his prime, he's finishing lower down the order.
Yeah.
As infuriating.
Yeah, exactly. But not infuriating is his teammate in Fabio Quartararo. Put it on pole and for his 3rd pole position in a row.
Yes.
And he won the race quite comfortably in the end.
He did. He had a nice little lead.
Yeah, it was a good 3 or 4 seconds, I think, by the end of the race. But that's after he kind of rolled off and just chilled and had a couple of nice slow laps.
Yeah, looked good all weekend.
Amazing through the corners, obviously. Was losing a ton of time down the straights to the Ducatis.
But he still looked good down the straights. He wasn't getting flustered. He wasn't, like, you could tell he wasn't pushing it over the crest.
That's it, because even when they blew past him, you're right. He didn't get flustered at all. He was very happy to keep going. And he's like, right, well, I've just got to snap back and take the first few corners. I'll try and break the gap and I'll do it again. And that was rinse and repeat for quite a few laps until he finally managed to get the lead he needed down the straight. And then it was job done.
Yeah, well, we saw it with some of the riders who were like, right, I'm going to keep this pinned over the crest. You've gone past me. We'll keep it going. And then we'll break later. And we'll
get a wobble.
Yeah, and we'll lose a few tenths. We use a couple of thou. No, just stuck to his braking markers, held his time, and then made it up on the infield.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Absolutely. A very dominant display from him.
It was, yeah. If this is what we can expect to see of him, from him coming into the next few rounds, it's going to look good.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you've only got to look at the championship right now. He's got, a 24-point lead over Johan Zarco in second. So, like, he's now almost a race win ahead. And Zarco has performed very well. Let's not fuck about it this year. Very, very well. But Zarco's still never won a MotoGP race.
No.
So, and arguably, Zarco's on a satellite machine. Zarco's not going to really be the one challenging him. His biggest challenger is coming from probably Pecco Bagnaia on 79 points, so 26 points back, and Jack Miller, who's a further 5 points back from there. So he's got more than a race win on his 2 biggest rivals.
Yeah. You look down that order. There's no one there I can really see challenging him.
No, not it would consistently. Take the arm pump issues or just a Mav-style breakdown for him not to be getting this title sorted.
You can't say it's already in the bag. I was about to, but you can't.
No, it's way too early for that. Yeah. We're a third of the way into the season, but it just feels, it's starting to feel like that. It is getting to the point where you're like, ooh, this title could be wrapped up a bit early.
Mm. The only one I could really see challenging him in there is Mir, just because of last year.
It's 40 points back
now,
exactly.
Man. We know he's like Mr. Ultra consistent and will just take all the points. But then he's relying on Fabio having bad days. But we've seen that in the past as well, where Quartararo's results, if they're bad, they're bloody bad.
Yeah, but I guess you could argue last year Quartararo lost the title.
Yeah, he gave it away.
And this year,
he's not
going to
do that
again. He's not going to do it again. Nah, it's happened once before, and he's now in the prime position. Last year, he looked good. This year, he looks like the title's his if he can maintain this.
To me, we now need to see a three-way scrap for a race win at an equal track like Catalunya, which we're going to this weekend, between Mir, Bagnaia, and Quartararo. Because I cannot see Zarco or Miller being consistent enough to be in the mix by the end of the year.
Interesting. I could see Miller doing it. I can't see Zarco doing it. But then, I mean, currently Zarco is comfortably ahead of them. So Zarco is the one doing it.
I just think it's going to change.
Yeah.
But we will see. I just want to see that three-way battle to see who could actually come out on top.
Yeah.
And then win that psychological game.
Yeah, that's exactly
that will be, to me, that will be the rod that breaks their back.
Yeah. Yeah,
we will see.
That's certainly
the case.
That's
wishful thinking.
Burping into the microphone. That's terrible, guys. I'm very sorry for that.
There's no pop filter either, so you're going to get the full appreciation.
I'll try and edit it out, but I'm not going to try too hard. So you might hear it, you might not. Who knows at this point?
Because I'd make it louder.
That's why I don't let you have control of these things, Steve. You just make me look like a twat all the time.
I make myself look a twat. I wouldn't worry.
I really thought you could be like, Tim, no one has to try to make you look a twat, mate. It's fine. You do that all by yourself.
I couldn't say that. If it was some of the lads at work, I'd be like, yeah, you're a knob. you do that hands down. Don't worry. Just be yourself. You'll be fine.
Yeah, that's fair. So, Steve, let's run through our predictions from last week. We both predicted the same podium last week. We both said it was going to be a Bagnaia win, Miller second, Zarco third. As it turned out, we were
completely wrong.
Yes.
But then everyone said the same thing.
It's true. Everyone.
No one rolled into the bookies with that podium.
No, but we did have people in the Facebook group, to be fair, that were very pro Quartararo. People were saying, no, I think Quartararo's going to do well. The Yamahas are going to do well. Don't underestimate them. And I was like, I agreed with a couple of people. I was like, yeah, I think you're right. But I'm still convinced it'll be a Ducati runaway.
I sat in the background just watching, looking, thinking, could be right.
Yeah.
Past form just literally screamed Ducati. Track screams Ducati.
Yeah, exactly that. And that's what I went with. That's what I bet on. Not bet on, but that's what I predicted. And I was wrong completely. So I didn't even score a single person on the podium that round.
Neither did I.
No.
Guys.
Not a good one, mate. Right, we've sort of just run through the top few in the championship, so we're also running a bit long now, so let's not worry about doing that now, Steve. We're also not going to do... We've got Catalunya coming up this next weekend.
I like Catalunya.
I like Catalunya.
Yeah. Awesome.
It's interesting as well, because when it comes to MotoGP, I always really look forward to Catalunya. When it comes to Formula 1, Catalunya's a bit shit, because
it's
they do so... Well, they do a lot of testing. Formula 1 tests at Catalunya a lot, so everyone's got it dialed in. There's very few like weird variables, because everyone knows the circuit, they know the times of year, they know everything.
Thanks for the ripples.
Well, yes, exactly. That's sadly a common occurrence with tracks.
It's always a track I look forward to. I mean, look at the titanic battles we've had there over the years.
I mean, you've only got to look at what is arguably one of the greatest MotoGP races of all time.
Yeah, 2009.
Exactly.
Go back there if you haven't seen it. For any reason, you're new to MotoGP, and you've just watched our pre-season or listened to our pre-season podcast.
Oh, yeah, our Introduction to MotoGP show that Steve did remind me to plug at the start of the show, and yeah, still failed to do so.
I thought I'd get it in there. I wasn't going to say it. I was going to let it go, but I tremendous.
But the race is actually on MotoGP's YouTube channel.
Yeah,
the full race is on there.
Go and watch it. Do yourself a favour. You need to see it, because it is arguably one of the best races of all time.
Yeah, it's a really, really incredible race.
And that's where we go this weekend.
It's and not every race is that good, to be fair.
It's not. It can throw a curveball and really be a dull race.
Yeah.
If we get the freight train, it can be not a boring race, because none of them are boring, but it can just be a follow your leader.
Yeah, it can be one of the less exciting races, but other years it's an incredible, incredible race. So it's one that's certainly worth getting excited about.
We never really know what we're going to get, but that adds the excitement. You sit there with so much anticipation. It never really disappoints, but sometimes it is just epic.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly that. So we're not going to do our full preview as in for previous races. And this is going to be, you know, for these double headers, this is probably going to be the case.
Yeah, we simply won't have time, or it is going to be a monster show.
Yeah.
We simply haven't got time to release two.
That's pretty much it. And, you know, a lot of you don't want to sit and listen to 2.5 hours of us chatting shit, which is fair enough.
Right.
Predictions then, Steve, for the upcoming race in Catalunya. I am going for a Quartararo win, Miller second, Mir in third.
I think it'll be Quartararo, and then I'm a bit lost after that. I really don't know. I was thinking about it today at work, so I am going to go for a Mir second.
Mir, okay.
And then I would really, really like to see Mr. Brad Binder.
Oh, you're thinking a Binder podium. Has Binder had a podium outside of his win in MotoGP? He hasn't, has he? So there we go. That could be quite an interesting one then. It would be nice to see Binder on the podium.
It would be nice to see him. Yeah.
But yes, I think it's going to be, this is going to be, as we saw actually, the corner speed bikes are going to have an advantage here. This straight is good, and I think that can help Miller, but I can't see, well, I can't really see anyone but Quartararo winning it now. No. Quartararo's really on one. He's on the tear.
He's on fire. He's got the little red flame next to his name.
Well, in the fantasy league. He does, yeah.
But we'll see. It's a corner speed track.
Certainly.
So, let's see what Ducati's downward facing aero can do.
Yes, great. Right, guys, that then brings us to the end of the show. So if you have any, the fantasy league, we're not gonna have time to run through the fantasy league today, guys. It's got too long. We will definitely do that in the next race, because, you know, I'm still in ninth, so still in the top 10.
No idea where I am. I'm pushing the bottom up. I am at the bottom, holding you all up ish.
But if you want to join the fantasy league, guys, just follow the link in the show notes and that'll take you there. There's still prizes up for grabs this year. And even if you've not set up your fantasy league yet, if you're good, you could potentially still get there. But we'll wait and see.
Yes.
What happens there. But if you do have any questions for us, guys, anything you want to say, you want to comment, tell us you like us, tell us you hate us, you know, the usual shit. You can find us on,
we are For the Love of MotoGP, and you can find us on Instagram and Twitter, or come and join us on the Facebook community. It's great over there. We just hit 80 members, which is really cool.
Yeah.
We like to keep
it's
that
still
going.
Chipping away, still it's growing nicely.
It's growing nicely. Or alternatively, we do have a Facebook page, which equally is good.
Yeah.
Or drop us a line. We are For the Love of MotoGP at gmail.com.
Yeah, and I think that brings us to the end of the show, guys. So thank you all very much for listening. Any final thoughts, Steve?
Don't think so. Let's just enjoy this weekend. It's going to be another great weekend of racing, and we will speak to you all next week.
Yep, we will speak to you all next week, guys. Stay safe out there. Look after each other. Remember, elbow bumps, fist bumps, none of them handshakes.
No kissing.
No kissing, unless, you know, you're really something good's on the cards, and then you can be doing the kissing, but not with strangers, guys. There's a stranger danger.
Yes.
So stay safe, mask it or casket, guys, and remember, if you are kissing strangers, use protection, my friends. We will speak to you next week. Goodbye.
Take care, guys.
Music is by Andrew Greenwood. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.